Kim Jong-un might be a fucking hero. Maybe he's just what Mother Earth's been praying for. Some crazy motherfucker who can trigger the big reset. Because really, could people possibly be more fucked up than they are right now? We're being overrun by whining, sniveling, entitled, ungrateful, overfed, underworked, participation-trophied societal parasites. And the only sure fix for parasites is to kill the hosts, isn't it? Maybe Kim Jong-un is the right man at the right time because he's precisely the poster boy for what I've just described. A soft, selfish, self-important, entitled sack of shit who has never created or achieved anything in his utterly meaningless life. But they claim he's not stupid. And so maybe, just maybe, he knows, he sees how vast portions of our world are comprised of assholes just like him. And he knows, at a subconscious level, we'd be better off without him and his countless replicas. So one night at the State Palace, after binge drinking and dress-up games, he stumbles into the command chamber to which only he has access. He flops into a swivel chair before a console covered with a keyboard and toggles and blinking rocker switches surrounding one solitary hinged metallic cylinder. He presses a thumb onto the scanning pad, and the cylinder opens, revealing a glowing red plunger button. His nail-bitten fingers drunkenly hover over that button, and then... As the launch sequence begins, he reclines in his chair with a feeling he's never before known in his 30-some years of existence. And that feeling is... achievement. He's finally done something. And demolition must sometimes precede renewal, mustn't it? That as those warheads streak across the Pacific, millions in the U.S. go about their lives, oblivious to their impending doom. U.S. missile defense systems launch their answers from silos and subs. A lone fisherman off the Solomon Islands sees the ocean's surface boil and the pre-dawn sky lit up by the thrusters of Trident II's arcing inexorably westward. A farmer running his combine across a Nebraskan cornfield, observes a contrail like he has never seen before and wonders if this is his last harvest. And soon, in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Phoenix, Denver, and metro areas eastward spanning the continental United States, priorities are irrevocably adjusted. The engine of the economy, iPhones and fashion and cosmetics are rendered the useless, worthless crap that they always were. In a few dozen flashes, politics and politicians are moot. The zeitgeist of the selfie is replaced by survival. And that may be exactly what mankind needs.
The safari park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hands off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
If you listen to this show with any regularity, you know I've got a thing for doomsday. I love it. Doesn't matter the method. Pandemic, monster, meteor, solar flares, climate change, global warming, ice age, pestilence, invaders from Mars, or the one the planet has been nail-biting over now since the dawn of the atomic age. Nuclear Armageddon. But Who gives a shit what triggers the grand finale? The important thing is that it happens. Just fucking bring it. There are over 500,000 podcasts out there, and I hope this is the only one with an end of days collection. In a little over 2 years, we've done 11 full episodes devoted to various doomsday scenarios, and now that our president is once again meeting with planet Earth's favorite boogeyman, Kim Jong-un, it's time we had another look, isn't it? The bummer is, it appears as if Trump is making progress in inching Kim's pudgy finger off that red reset button. But as we learn day in and day out, you cannot trust the media. They're all full of shit. They're all fake news. When Trump first met Kim, the media was gnashing its teeth. They were tearing their hair out and screaming, "The end is near!" That Trump was a ham-fisted idiot and Kim a complete maniac. And this meeting could only result in nuclear war, or as they're fond of saying, nuclear war. Now that Trump might be making progress with Kim, they're no longer worried about war. They're concerned about love. Well, just listen to this.
Is this visit, just for lack of a better word, a romantic visit?
Did the president say that he loved Kim Jong-un again this weekend?
They have this, what,
love and kisses? Did he? I don't know. Did they send each other?
It's so disturbing and dangerous.
A Valentine's card?
Wow, that is some about face. And so what if Trump and Kim like each other? Why are Minka the Ginka and beady-eyed Joe mocking it? Sounds kinda homophobic of them, doesn't it? And who are those two jackholes to mock anybody's romance with their on-camera affair? And you know that it's going to cool off. And when it does, it's going to be TMZ grist for weeks on end. When they're both hiring hitmen for each other while trying to act cordial for the camera, finally, they'll be doing some good television. So Trump is meeting Kim in Hanoi, another commie shithole. I guess that's a counterpoint to the first summit that was held in Singapore, but no matter. The important thing is, we have the inside track. We don't broadcast scuttlebutt or innuendo like those cable fucktards. We get the pillow talk straight from Kim's favorite companion, Ting Ting. Now, twice before, Ting Ting, who is Kim's favorite hooker, she has spoken with us. She's divulged some highly sensitive information. The fact that 1 in 4 of Kim's nuclear warheads are dummies. The fact that he enjoys dressing up in bridal gowns with Dennis Rodman. And he owns a cargo container filled with anal toys. Ting Ting has promised to call in today with some fresh intel. And I sincerely hope... There she is now. Hello, Ting Ting?
Yes.
Well, thanks for calling in, Ting Ting. How are you?
I am good.
Ting Ting, I must ask you something that's been troubling me since we first talked. Kim's brutality is legendary. Don't you fear for your life because of your talks with me?
Never.
Why not?
Because Kim is a big fat pussy.
What?
Oh, he's a shun. No go. Like I told you before, he is the son of a whore. And he has giant mommy issues. Issues which I probed more deeply since our last conversation.
Probed? How?
Hypnotic regression. One night in the palace in Pyongyang, after we prayed the Hukau and Bronco Buster, I decided to put him under.
Hukau and Bronco Buster?
Hukau. Human cow. Google it. You'll find out. So, after we pray, he's all tuckered out, and that's when I grab my hypno wheel and put it in his face and take him back, way back to preschool. And he tells me that his mother used to make him eat sticks of butter like they was popsicles.
Well, no wonder he's hostile.
And fat. Then I ask him who he want to be when he grow up. And he tell me either a He-Man, Masturbator of the Universe, or a She-Ra, Princess of Punani.
So he was confused about his sexuality?
Oh, yes.
Well, which character did he choose?
Neither. I told you before, he is hookah. Don't you listen?
So how will Kim's prurient play affect the talks in Hanoi?
If your stupid CIA would listen to your show, they would know that all Trump has to say is, by the power of Grayskull, and Kim will surrender all the nukes.
By the power of Grayskull? What is that?
Some stupid shit from the He-Man cartoon he likes. When Kim hears those words, he goes into sex trance.
Is it wise for the president to trigger a sex trance during negotiations?
Why not? Isn't the whole idea to catch the other guy with his pants down?
Ting Ting, what is your prediction for the outcome of this summit?
Well, I think that the word the summit is misspelt. It should be some shit. Because Kim is a sneaky meatball, and everything he touch turns to shit. Except for me. And I always make him wear latex gloves.
Well, folks, there you have it. From the woman who shares his bed and innermost secrets. Regular listeners know I'm kind of a word freak. And there are several words that I often reference because they are the words of choice used by those who want to restrict free speech and control behavior. Inappropriate, or as I like to say it, inappropriate. That's a mainstay. Offensive is another. One that's steadily gaining on the first two is comply or compliance. And in just the 7-day span since last week's show, a couple of usages of that word popped up that really underscore and substantiate the fact that it is a key word in the vocabulary of commies and nanny statists, which are, of course, the same thing. I was at a friend's house, and his daughter was home from college. They get into a heated discussion about the apparent lack of fun on campus today. It seems students walk around with their noses in their phones, and nobody laughs or has a good time. And she said something that really tripped a wire for me. She asked her father if he'd prefer if she was drunk and belligerent. And I thought, holy shit. The antonym of belligerent is compliant. So her compliance is a matter of pride. A couple days later, I see a story from the NRA. It's about some attorney for Michael Bloomberg, billionaire, former New York mayor, and model for the Flying Monkeys and the Wizard of Oz. And this attorney works for Bloomberg's gun-grabbing front, Every Town for Gun Safety. Isn't that cute? Such a warm and folksy name. Every Town. Kind of like Thornton Wilder's Our Town, or maybe Mayberry, huh? With Sheriff Andy and Barney Fife and Floyd the Barber and Aunt Bee. So this Bloomberg attorney was being questioned by some politician over some legislation Bloomberg and his Everytown front wants passed, a bill that would criminalize the private transfer of firearms. What does that mean? Well, say your old man croaks, and you are his sole heir and entitled to all his property. So along with the house and the car and his stamp collection, you would inherit his, Colt 38. Not anymore. And if you were in possession of that gun without having completed a proper transfer before his death, you'd go to jail. When challenged about this piece of asinine and draconian legislation, here's exactly what Bloomberg's lawyer had to say, quote, "The ultimate goal of this type of legislation is not to put people in jail, but rather to create a culture of compliance," unquote. Ain't that some shit, hmm? If you want to know where I net out on the gun controversy, you should check out bonus episode number 2, Home Invasion, which is at patreon.com/thatlarryshow, a tale of how I successfully stopped an attempted home invasion. Academia is a culture of compliance, huh? And it appears so is Western Europe. I saw a sickening video this week on Twitter. A couple of British bobbies arresting an elderly street preacher. All the guy was doing was standing in an open public square, reading from the Bible. No bullhorn, no amplifier, just his old man voice, which was kind of feeble. The cops told him to shut his mouth, and when he questioned them, just questioned them, that was not compliance. So they pinned his bony old arms behind his back, cuffed him, and took him away. People were understandably enraged. I sure as hell was. Of course, there were a few compliant types who were just fine with it. Said the bobbies were only doing their job. Didn't the SS guard say that at Dachau and Belsen? Yes, it was something to that effect. Why do some people love the boot on their neck, love to be told what to do, love to ask permission for every fucking thing? Where does that obsequious nature come from? I don't get it. No matter what nasty shit goes down, they are going to side with the corporation, the government, or the uniform. Of course, the verbiage is always key in analyzing the zeitgeist. Not too long ago, cops, government agencies, etc., they used to ask people to cooperate. Remember that? They don't use the word cooperate anymore. Now they demand that we comply. Similar words, but the difference in meaning is vast. Cooperation implies two parties working together to achieve a common goal. Compliance is submission, surrender, servitude. You want me to cooperate with authorities? Okay, no problem. Comply? Go fuck yourself. I first explored this in episode 20, Wise Up Sheeple, which you can find on the show page at thatlarryshow.com in the April 2017 archive. And in that, and the prior episode, I got deep into a big story at that time about a 70-year-old doctor who refused to give up his seat on a plane, a seat he had bought and paid for in full months in advance. And the airline, which was United, whistled up a couple of uniformed thugs who ripped the old guy out of his seat and literally dragged him off the plane by his feet, giving him a concussion, broken nose, and knocking out several of his teeth. The United CEO was at first 100% behind his staffers. He was furious that somebody who was paying his $10 million salary had the nerve not to comply with his employees. He claimed the doctor had been belligerent, the B word. But once the video went viral, which revealed the truth, CEO man quickly backpedaled and kissed ass and sucked dick as fast and furiously as he could. But what astonished me was how many assholes were on the side of the airline. As if customers were privileged to be allowed to pay for a cramped seat, and should surrender that seat without question or complaint. And many of the same assholes also said the uniformed punks who beat up the old guy were only doing their job. Well, here's a little update on that story. One of those assholes, whose name is James Long, who dragged that old man off that plane, is now suing both United Airlines and his former employer, the City of Chicago Department of Aviation. He's suing them for $150,000. Why? Well, his attorney says, quote, Long feels he was doing his duty at the time Dr. Dow was escorted off the plane. He was not in the wrong. But if he did do something wrong, it was because the City of Chicago failed to properly train him. Unquote. Wow. You cannot make this shit up. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. We've got a bonus episode posting this week. I think you'll dig it. Of course, There are self-driving cars, but how about cars equipped with facial recognition software that will detect if you are sleepy, drunk, or in a state of road rage, and then it will call the cops on you. We'll have a look at that rolling shit show, and then, as the mission of this show is to enable you to take no shit, we'll look at the flip side of that. Some asshats and fuckballs that will go down in history as the ultimate shit takers. You will not believe their woeful and hysterical tales of shit taking on a gargantuan level. Slide by thatlarryshow.com and click the Patreon button to get access to dozens of bonus episodes, signed books, custom recordings. Yes, I'll record just about anything you want me to say other than bomb and death threats. And best of all, you get to have the fellowship and advice of our deep bench of worldly senseis. While there, be sure to click one of those subscribe buttons, whether Apple Podcasts, Google Stitcher, RSS, email, Spotify, Android. We've got it all covered for your listening pleasure. And don't forget, this Sunday is Sinner Sunday. Come hang with me, Brother Dre, the Lariats, and everyone else who's had a bellyful of the corporate God providers. Until that time, take no shit.